Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience with Darren and Mark and a special guest.
Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience podcast series. As you probably know by now, each podcast will explore a different element of the fan experience and fan engagement. Some of them will look at the match day experience, while others will explore broader themes. But every podcast will deliver value to anyone listening in football, or indeed any other spectator sport. So whether it's general advice you're after, or ways to help you start a conversation with your own colleagues, we hope that a regular dose of the fan experience will make a big difference. So join me, Mark.
And me, Darren, as we explore ways of improving the experience on match days, making clubs more sustainable and relying less on winning to keep those fans engaged.
And of course, if you want to find out more about us, you can visit our new website, www.fanexperienceco.com. You can also visit our new Instagram site at fanexperience.co, where you'll find lots of images and videos of our travels around Europe. There's some great stuff up there. Especially on the Danish Superliga. So if you're following us from Denmark or you're interested in Danish football, have a look on there and you can get a real insight into what it's like to be at clubs like Silkeborg, Odense, AGF in Aarhus and others. It's really a great country to watch football. Well, this podcast means a lot to Darren and I because it takes us back to last August when we went to Leuven. Do you remember those wonderful summer days, Darren?
It's hard not to remember it. I mean, it was so hot. I remember this. My skin was almost burning off. It was
lovely. But it was also very good to be asked there because we were specifically invited by today's podcast guest to help him and the club address some feedback from families that they wanted a better experience and also the opportunity the club had identified to actually really get the next generation of fans into the stadium.
Well, I thought it was a really interesting one because obviously we work a lot with leagues where we do work that covers all the clubs within that particular league or all the clubs within a particular division. And it was really interesting because obviously the club approached us to almost do this as a standalone project.
Well, you're right. You're quite right because that's one of the reasons we were so excited about it because obviously, as you say, with more than 2,000 individual club assessments, matchday assessments under our belt over these last 15 years, you're just dying to get your hands on an individual club, have it. So
it was brilliant as well for a club to say, look, come in, look at the whole club, look at everything we do, find out everything we do, and then tell us what we should do next. I guess for us, it's almost like the closest we'll get to a blank piece of paper. You know, and it was just great to be able to present back to them and say, you know, if you're just going to start this from now, this is the way we would approach it. And then obviously I went back for the assessment, which I'll bring up with Peter, that sort of really showed that they'd listened to what we said, they'd put in so many of the recommendations. And even though it was still very early days, because it was November and they'd got lots still to work on, it was the atmosphere was just so good that night. And I remember thinking, they really understood what we were trying to tell them.
And I think, we're about to introduce Peter Willems to everybody so we can talk about the experience. But when you've got the chief executive behind something like that, which is we're not just making operational changes here, but we're trying to get everybody in the club to think differently about their purpose. Not just a football club now, we're a community hub. And that's a real challenge and it can't be done without the support of the person who's running the club. And I think that's a really important point. So as you can see, folks, if you're listening into this podcast, this is one of the very best ones we're likely to do, making something really change within a club, being there step by step and it being done in all 3 months. To Belgium. And our guest today is the CEO of OH Leuven, currently a second division side in Belgium. And our guest is the CEO there, Peter Willems. Peter, nice to see you.
Nice to meet you guys.
No, it's nice to have you on the show. I mean, we met when you were at UEFA. You say you were there for 14 years. Last summer, you very kindly invited Darren and I over to have a look at family provision at the stadium to help you and Jimmy at the club design a kind of world-class family experience. And of course, it was great to spend some time there. So 12 months later, here we are with you on the podcast. And you've been facing some recent challenges lately. Is that right?
I think that's a slight understatement. I think the world has seen some challenges with the whole COVID-19 things. But for us, the problem was that we were playing for the promotion playoffs, home and away. The first leg was played, but then the pandemic hit and we couldn't play the second game. So we are still not known if we will play, in what league we will play next season, if it's the first division or still in the second division. But that second game, the away or the return leg, still is now scheduled for 2 August, which is 5 days before the start of the new league, which is, I think, unheard of in football that you will know only 5 days before the start of a league in what league you will be.
That's amazing. What happened in the first leg then when you were at home?
We were away, but we lost 1-0. So
okay. I see. So it's the home leg to come.
Yeah, the home leg to come, which in any case we will play now without public, so that disadvantage we will have already.
Yeah.
And then now it's a bit of a mess about with what players you can play. Is it new players that are eligible for next season, or you have to play with players that were eligible at the date of the return game, the initial date? So we don't have 100% straight answers yet. At the moment, the league says, and they've put it also in the laws of the game for next season, is that we can play with new players. But of course, the other team is opposing that, and they might have a case or they might not have a case. That's the additional insecurity.
Is the, are the fixtures out for the new season as well, Peter?
No. There's just one. Like the 1st of August will be the cup final of the past season. The 2nd of August will be our match. No. And then there will be the 7th of August, the start of the new league. But the fixtures are not known yet.
When we first met, you were working very hard, you know, to engage the local community, to look after your existing fans, you know, really honour their passion and their support for the club, but also to try and engage more of the community, you know, and specifically looking at the family experience. And as many people will know, you're the sister club of Leicester City. So like Leicester, very progressive, you know, really trying to strengthen your position in the locality, in the region, and become more than a football club, you know, become a community hub. So what was that part of the experience like? Before we get to COVID, tell us a little bit about some of the things that you were doing.
I think what we started with at the very, very beginning of the adventure is communicate, to be honest, is go into communication with the fans, with the different supporters groups, with the families, for the family stand, let's say it like that, understand what they liked about the club, what they didn't like about the club, but always in a very transparent and open way. And since that, we have continued to do that. We have a monthly meeting with all the supporter groups. And from the beginning, we have said that we will always be transparent, that we will always explain what we do, that we will listen first to what they like, and then, but that there might be also days that we disagree, but that we will explain it and we will disagree in a transparent way, that we will do as much as we can for them. That, I mean, of course, they're the backbone of any club, I would say. I mean, if you don't have fans, you don't have a club. But I think that was, in hindsight, a very smart move. Because I still feel that that's carrying us every month, that communication, being honest with the fans, no fooling around, and sometimes disagree, but in an open way. I think that's really paying off now, especially in these difficult times, like where you feel that fans have the trust in us, that we are doing the right thing for the club.
How often do you have to communicate with fans, Peter, on the current situation, then, given there's so much uncertainty?
I mean, before the COVID, we were certainly with the supporters groups. We had a monthly meeting, and there was they put an agenda together. We put a few agenda points, and we discussed a whole evenings long, let's say, like that. Now we give a little bit of updates. It's a little bit more difficult now, although we had 2 weeks ago, we continued the series of monthly meetings through the same system as we are doing now, like with the Zoom meeting, which went well. The only problem that a little bit is difficult to, because there is a lot of legal work behind the scenes being done to safeguard our position. And obviously, it's not always easy to talk about legal work when decisions are not made yet. So that's a little bit of difficulty I have now, is to communicate about things that I cannot really talk about.
No, I think that's a really important point, because when you widen it out to business more generally, and you know, Darren and I go back a few years in the service excellence industry, for want of a better word, there was a phrase which was, you know, if you're engaging customers and engaging your employees, you would let them influence decisions that were above the line, almost as if it were a ship. So it was above sea level, because if you allow them to influence or control decisions below sea level and something goes wrong, then you can sink the boat. You know, and I think there's always been a balance, especially in football, where, you know, the first kind of instinctive step from fans is not to trust the club. So you always, you know, you're starting from a negative position. And I remember speaking to Neil Doncaster, who at the time was CEO of Norwich City, and they had a supporter consultation committee back in the 90s. And they allowed them to, you know, contribute to the setting of the season ticket price, which at the time was quite revolutionary. And, you know, allowing them to say, you know, what are the factors that you think are important? This was at a time when the club was being promoted to the Premier League. So hopefully a similar move for yourselves. And what happened was they established an agreement that they would increase them by inflation, which meant that when the club was then relegated again at the end of the following season, which we hope you won't be, they then were rewarded by actually even more people buying a season ticket than the year before. So this transparency, you know, you have to get the balance right. But when you do, the rewards can be really positive. And I guess now with this really difficult situation you find yourself in, that currency is just tangible, isn't it?
Yeah. It's interesting, as you say, about ticket pricing, because that's what we did. We discussed the season ticket prices 2 weeks ago. And in the end, we decided, and we will launch it tomorrow, that we will launch. We don't know what matches will be played. We don't know what league will be played. But tomorrow we will launch the season ticket prices and the possibility to buy. And we say that before 2 August, you can buy a season ticket at the second division price, even if it's going to be the first division. Fantastic. And I think that's gonna work well. I think people will appreciate that.
I was going to ask that, Peter. What is the attitude and the understanding of the fans that you've been speaking to on the Zoom call, given that they just don't know what division they'll be supporting the club in next season?
I think, yeah, I mean, you talk to supporter group people, so they are very committed to the club in any case. So, but I think everybody's upset. I'm upset with how the Pro League, which is the equivalent of the Premier League organization, has treated us. How the big clubs, because that's the problem in the situation we are, because we have good backing by King Power, by Leicester. People don't like to see us come to the first division, because we're going to take a place of somebody, and we're not going to relegate next season. I mean, of course, it's football, but if you follow a little bit of economic logic, we will not relegate. Mm-hmm. And then that's why a lot of people are against us. And of course, that creates then again a little bit of bond with the fans, saying like it's us against them. And we're trying to play a little bit at that too.
But that was the case with Millwall. It always has been the case with Millwall, isn't it? That, you know, no one likes us, we don't care. It actually bonds everybody together in that part of the world. I mean, you know, they've suffered with the closure of the docks. It's a place of high unemployment with low opportunities for kids. And, you know, anything that binds people together in the football world is to be welcomed. So you're finding that you really reached out to families this season. So this was a big move, wasn't it? You're very careful at the way you manage the segmentation of the stadium, you know, creating areas for the kind of the hardcore, the ultra fans, the long-term fans and the noisiest fans, but also creating a family stand. And it's clear that not only are you aware of how important transparency is, but also how important it is to attract the next generation.
Yeah, we had a sort of family stand, but I think if you look what was included in that experience, it was just the name. It is a family stand and you get seats and you get them for your kids a little bit cheaper. But it was also, I mean, it were the best seats in the stadium that we were then selling at some lower prices. And I thought, I mean, we don't give any experience to the fans, to the younger fans, and they're using our most expensive places at a very reduced price. So I wanted to move them. I said, look, I'm going to give you another place in the stadium, but I'm going to add an experience. I'm going to do something for you. And that was difficult because people had struggled to see, like, oh, why do we have to move? These seats were very good. We want to keep them. And then to the point that we had two or three parents on social media every day complaining about everything. So I said, okay, invite them. So I had them in my office. I said, look, tell me what your problem is. And I explained. And then the whining stopped. They did not really agree with me, but I said, look, this is now a very good case of where I explain you why I do things and what I'm going to offer. Yeah. Then we disagree. But I think the biggest compliment came because one of the ladies of the supporter groups, that's sort of in the board of all the overarching supporter groups, she was very against the plans, but she came back 3 or 4 months later to say, I hold my hand up. I was wrong. You were right. You provide an experience. We have the mascot now in the stands. We provide activities. We have freestylers teaching the kids before the match the tricks. We have pancakes. We have this and that and the other. So I think in the end, if I look back, it was the absolute right decision. Communicated well. Provided also delivering on a promise. So not like just saying that we were going to do something, but we did it also. And then we got positive feedback for it.
Well, I can agree with that, Peter, because Mark said at the start, we came in the summer. I think it was the hottest spell of the summer as well, and did the work with you. But I actually, as you know, came back in November to do an actual assessment, mm-hmm. some of the work that yourself and Jimmy had put into place. I must admit, I had a great experience. It was a really, really brilliant, positive atmosphere within the stadium. And yeah, what I thought was particularly good was the way that the fans all come into the stadium. Or majority of the fans come into the stadium through one entrance, and that gives you, Peter, the advantage of being able to put a lot of activities and a lot of effort to put activities and the mascot and all things that will help to entertain those fans into one place, and it makes the experience much better. Would you agree?
Yep, it's a bit the layout of the stadium, but it's really the. You can create the welcome of the club because everybody has to go to the same gate.
Yeah, and how are your numbers, Peter, with families now?
We are up, not massively up yet, but we are increasing. So, but the problem is still that we are in that second division, but hopefully almost out. But I think it's also fair to say that the match that we were gonna play for promotion with public was. Very quickly fully sold out. Yeah. So I feel also that once we are in the first division, the potential is really high there. I was, to be honest, a bit worried over the season, but I still think now that for the family tribune, but also for the stands in general, I think that our aim should be to have sell out every single game.
Yeah, and we hope, we certainly, you know, sincerely hope that it happens next season. And before we go to the roundup, though, there is one last thing that Darren and I would like to thank you for, and that was directing us to the main square in the town. I mean, it's got to be one of the most beautiful cities in Europe, and the medieval town hall is just something to behold. One of the most striking buildings you will ever see. And I did see it very clearly, although it began to fall out of focus as the Leffe beer that you recommended that I try began to hit. I think it was the Leffe beer. Was that one? It might have been a different one, but it was certainly a very strong beer. And given that it was about 35 degrees as well, I realized very quickly that you can only have one.
Time for the roundup.
It's the roundup again. And every podcast, as you know by now, we look for a piece of current news or current best practice or something that we've spotted that we want to share with you to help you engage your fans, improve the experience and grow your club. Currently, right now, the focus is on George Floyd, a black man who was murdered in Minneapolis last week at the hands of the local police. Since then, the global reaction has been astounding. There have been demonstrations in support of hashtags such as Black Lives Matter and also Together We Are Stronger. And it was this hashtag, Together We Are Stronger, the championship side West Bromwich Albion tweeted very recently. A response from one fan was pretty negative and pretty insulting to black people. The club's response was to say, when he threatened to not renew his season ticket, well, you won't be missed. And I think we would all agree with that one, and we would share the club's sentiments. And I think, Darren, this is really important because this is an example of a club not just having something that it stands for, but acting on it. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's quite strange, really, that you'd think that if any club or the fans of any club would be 100% behind the sentiments of the Black Lives Matter movement, you'd think it would be West Brom, given the influence of black players like Cyril Regis and Laurie Cunningham in the 70s and 80s, and the fact they have a statue of those two and Batson outside the stadium. So that was a real surprise. But I think on a wider scale, I think what sport is quickly realising is just what an influence it can be as well.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think we'd both agree it's probably less than 0.0001% of the West Brom fan base behave like that. But you are absolutely right, Brendan Batson as well. I mean, there are so many players that I remember growing up and watching. Cyril Regis, I mean, you know, so many fantastic clubs there. But you're right, you know, to see, I think it's going to be absolutely vital as well after we get through this COVID thing, that clubs have a strong identity, that that they do actually stand for something. One of the guests coming up on the podcast will be Daniel Lambert from Bohemians in Dublin. And, you know, anyone that knows the club will know that it's undergone such a transformation in the last 6 or 7 years. It's almost unrecognizable. But nothing of this has been about the football.
Yeah, I think certainly that club, but I think what other clubs have to do is start to understand and realize their power and strength and influence within the community. And I think one thing that this pandemic is going to really bring out is that clubs will start to realise that even if you take away the winning and the league position and the 3 points and all that sort of stuff, there is still the club plays a huge part in people's lives and can make a big difference to them.
So I hope you'll tune in, folks, when we do that podcast, but also in some of the others, because we will spend a lot of time in this series exploring club identity, how clubs can express that difference and how they can use those differences to give back to the community. The concept of social value. And there's never been a more important time than post-COVID. That's something that Leuven have been doing. Leuven have been working very hard. We're very grateful to have had your company on today's podcast, Peter. We wish you very good success for the future, especially on the 2nd of August. And we hope that we will see you in the top division of Belgian football very soon.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Peter. It's been a pleasure having you. I know Darren and I have been looking forward to having you on the podcast. So we're going to wrap up this particular episode. Darren, positive memories of Leuven?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Just one of my favourite assessments, I think.
And so we hope, guys, that you will all, everybody listening, you will spend time just to have a little look at what they're doing there over in Belgium. We definitely urge you to visit the town, an absolutely beautiful place to be. So thanks for checking in. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on the Fan Experience podcast series. Bye-bye.
And don't forget to check out our new website at fanexperienceco.com. The Fan Experience was recorded live. See you next time.